Thanks for listening to Access Utah today. We're hearing interviews I recorded last week at the Extension Sustainability Summit in Park City. Full range of topics covered: water, land, climate change, food. Later in the program, we'll talk with Iris Mays from University of Idaho. She'll be talking about a program she's involved with, which is in part trying to improve Coeur d'Alene Indians' access to native foods. Next is my conversation with Gail Buchanan. He's former USDA chief scientist and undersecretary for research, education, and economics, and he's dean and director emeritus of the College of Agriculture and Agricultural and Environmental Sciences at University of Georgia. He spoke at the summit on Solutions from the Land initiative.
If you go back before agriculture, there was some, it's estimated, the planet's population was 1 to 5 million. That's million with an M. Well, then when agriculture got started some 10, 12,000 years ago, depending upon your source, for the next 10, 12,000 years, as agriculture evolved and developed, there was a better supply of food, more consistent supply of food. The population of the planet grew to some 200 million by 1 AD. Well, then it only took about 1,800 years for the population of the planet to reach a billion. And of course, then only 123 years for it to reach 2 billion. And then, of course, the population started growing rapidly. The planet population passed 7 billion this past October a year ago. And of course, what's of concern is that most conservative estimates place the population of the planet in excess of 9 billion by mid-century. That means there's going to be 2 billion more mouths to feed in less than 40 years from now. But that's not the whole picture. The big picture is many of these world's people, including some in developed countries, are wanting more food, more diversity of food, better quality of food, more vegetables, more fruits, more animal products. So the challenge that the land has got to provide is tremendous. And, of course, I think most of us agree now that agricultural production will be a part of the energy security in the future. And so that means we add not only food for humans, feed for our livestock and companion animals, fiber and flowers for the environment, but we now add energy to that expectation from the land. So the land resource is critical for our survival on this planet.
So you've outlined a pretty steep problem, a lot of stresses on the land. What are some of the solutions?
Well, there's a lot of challenges. And if you look at the challenges, number one is we're losing land. For example, in just 25 years from 1982 to in the next 25 years, we lost over 9 million acres of cropland. We lost substantial amount of acres, some 12 million acres, to pastures and forest lands that went into development. We also lost some 16 million acres of forest. So that's a tremendous loss of land resource that's out of production. But, of course, that's not the only picture. We still need land for people to live on. We need roads, highways. We need shopping malls. We need reservations. We need parks. We need rights of way for power lines, so we have a lot of uses for the land in addition to producing the food, feed, fiber, and energy we need to sustain us. That's one of the challenges. Another of the real challenges is there's not a good reward system for ecosystem services. Now, that's protecting and providing environmental considerations. We all agree that we need to protect the environment and try to enhance diversity and that sort of thing. But those that participate and do that, there's not a way to compensate them for doing that. And it's common knowledge that if you're going to expect someone to do something that costs them, you have to find some way to give them some type of remuneration. So that's another real challenge we're facing. Another one is of deep concern to me is declining support for research. In fact, this is why I'm spending much of my retirement working on a book on the importance of agricultural research, because this is the only way we're going to generate new information, knowledge, and technology that will enable us to do the things we want to do in a more efficient way is through research. And yet, we in this country are declining to support research as well as many other countries. Even countries that are desperately needing more agricultural productivity are declining to support research. So declining support research is a deep, deep concern that I have and one of the real challenges. Also, the challenge of climate. And of course, we know all the arguments. I was just reading an article in the Wall Street Journal on the plane coming up about how the problem of climate change is overblown. But still, I think most of us agree that climate is changing. Now, you might want to quibble and argue a little bit about what's causing it and what are the values of each cause of the climate change, but it's no question that climate is changing and it will have an impact on productivity of our agricultural interest as well as our forest interest as well as other things. And then there's a normal risk you take, market volatility, changing expectations and market demands. The market is demanding more organically grown food. We see an effort in some areas for locally produced food. All of these things will have an impact on how the land is used. So these are just some of the challenges that we face in achieving the goal that we have of ensuring that the land is there for us for the future.
What kind of agricultural production do you think is going to take? It sounds like with so many more mouths to feed and so many more stresses, we need to get more production per acre, right? But that kind of goes in the face of the current trends. A lot of people want higher quality, want organic. They want, they want some of these that perhaps would produce less per acre.
Well, you've put your finger on the real challenge. And obviously, we've got to have more. We've got to have more, but I show one figure in my presentation that was provided by three economists in the Economic Research Service in Washington, USDA, that shows three curves. It has a curve that's almost flat, which over the past half century shows inputs in support of agriculture, showing almost no increase in inputs. Then you have two other curves that are very parallel and very close to each other that show a nice progression over the past half century. One curve is output, and the other curve is total factor productivity. That's the efficiency of production. Now, the bottom line is output has increased about 1.58% during that period. Total factor productivity is about 1.52%. Input is about 0.06%. Now, what that really means is essentially all of the increase in output over the last half century has been because we have increased the efficiency of production. That has come about through research. So if there's any chart that tells the story of the importance of agricultural research, this very simple but elegant chart by these three economists illustrates so clearly why agricultural research is important.
Maybe you could point to some agricultural research that has had an effect from the past or current, or, but give us an example of what agricultural research has produced.
Well, and I mentioned I'm writing a book on agricultural research, and one of the things I've done is gone back in the National Agricultural Statistics Service to see what's happened to yields of major commodities over the past, ever since they started keeping records, and I've used corn, soybeans, wheat, rye, barley, peanuts, and it's phenomenal what's happened to those yield increases over the years. Some of the yields, I think we started keeping records on wheat maybe in 1866 or somewhere back then. The yields have increased phenomenally. Now, that's just yield increases. Corn is the same thing. Almost every commodity, the yield increase has been tremendous during that period. And so that's just one indication of what research has done. But then I like to come back and say there's a lot of things other than just productivity. For example, the elimination of drudgery. I was raised on a farm in which my father believed in the children working from daylight till dark, hoeing weeds out of peanuts and things like that. And the development of herbicides eliminated tremendous amounts of drudgery. Picking cotton, which is a miserable job. Cotton pickers eliminated the drudgery out of picking cotton. Harvesting peanuts, harvesting corn. Corn harvest used to last for months. In fact, you start picking corn as soon as it was dry in August and pick till Christmas. In fact, in the Midwest, you'd pick when there was snow on the ground, trying to get the corn out. Hope to get it out before you had to start planting again. And now with big combines, I was on my farm this past week, and they had a big six-row combine that was picking the corn, and they could pick a 40-acre field in a day. I mean, it's just unbelievable, the elimination of drudgery. And there's several other ways that research has made agriculture different. Increasing that total factor productivity or enhance the efficiency of production. And this is what we've got to work on. This is why research is so important for the future.
You've made a strong case for the need to increase production. But I wonder if you talk to the organic camp, which is growing, and there is kind of social pressures. People who don't like herbicides. And so your message probably not going to be very popular with those folks. I wonder what you say to them.
My feeling is if you don't like herbicides, don't use them. No one holds a gun to your head and says use herbicides. And if the organic folks wants to grow their food in that way, that's their prerogative. This is a free country. But I would say that if we're going to meet the expectations to feed a planet, we have no choice but to use technology. And I would say that goes for biotechnology. I know there's some anti-biotechnology efforts. It's still very common. But, you know, it's kind of remarkable. One of the things that strikes me, one of the first major uses of biotechnology was in developing insulin from genetically modified organisms. And yet, genetically modified organisms that produced insulin was used and accepted almost immediately, universally, by diabetics the world over. In fact, my wife uses insulin every day of her life, thanks to genetically modified organisms. And why such a great clamor over genetically modified corn and almost no cry over genetically modified medicine? It is interesting. I find it remarkable. But I don't think, in fact, I can't think of any technology introduced into agriculture that at one time was not controversial. I was in the South as a young boy when hybrid seed corn was first introduced in that part of the world. And there were many farmers that would not plant hybrid seed because they reasoned that if you couldn't save the seed, there must be something wrong with it. And so they suffered through open pollinated varieties of corn while some of their neighbors were growing hybrid corn for 2 or 3 years till they saw what those hybrid seed were doing till they came around. There was even concern that steel plows would not be successful because they would poison, quote, the soil. Obviously, it didn't pan out. The whole era of ag chemicals is still controversial in some areas. Biotechnology is controversial. So the issue of controversy in agricultural technology is certainly not new. I rather suspect that the first person to hook a water buffalo up to a stick for a plow, some of his neighbors probably grumbled that this was not a very wise use of water buffaloes, but I don't know that.
So in conclusion, where is the project? What's next?
Well, what we're trying to do now is meet with as many people as we can to try to build support and interest. But the bottom line is we now have a publication that kind of brought our thoughts together. And so we want to try to expand the group that has an interest and build as much enthusiasm as we can for solutions of the land. Because the pathways that we identified is not something that can be done by a committee. It's not something that can be done by a small group. Well, let me just run through the pathways that we've identified. Number one is that any of the things that we do that's going to be successful has got to be done on a landscape scale type solution. You've got to look at a big picture. You can't look at one field or one operation. You've got to look at the broad big picture. So landscape scale type solutions is important. We've got to harmonize different policies. We have so many different kinds of policies that it's hard to understand them all, and we need to harmonize them. We still have arguments over all kinds of rules and regulations between different projects and activities. So we need to harmonize all policies so we're all together. And that requires bringing together a lot of diverse groups, not only within the ag community and forestry community, but the conservation community and all environmental community as well. And this is why the environmentalist has got to be very much a part of this whole effort.